Hey, Perf Bites listeners, before you get started with today's episode, please pay attention to this message from our sponsor, SmartBear.
Whether you want to load test your APIs or your browser-based applications, you need to be able to easily scale up volume and identify problem areas. SmartBear has you covered. Load UI is the rock star of API load testing. Using an intuitive, versatile design, Load UI gives you the power to scale up and out, letting you dial up high volume and real-world load from any number of local and remote computers, all within a single test environment. With Load UI, it's easy to create and configure tests incorporating all of your OS, application, and database statistics agentlessly. It's fully interactive too, so you can easily modify your tests and fix errors on the fly. Load Complete is an astonishingly easy-to-use load testing tool for HTML, AJAX, and rich internet applications. Create and run automated load tests in minutes using a browser to naturally record your interactions with your website or app. You can scale up the number of virtual users, pull in data from Excel and other sources, monitor server resources during test execution, and even distribute your tests geographically. Reports and charts make it a breeze to explore aspects of how your site or app performs under pressure and ultimately pinpoint performance issues proactively. Load UI and Load Complete by SmartBear. Ensure outstanding performance across your entire web stack.
Time for Perf Bites.
What the f*** is Perf Bites?
The fourth square meal of the day.
Don't bogart the Perf Bites.
Waffles.
Microwave ready.
Blah, 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 blah.
Add nutritional value to your brain.
It's time for Perf Bites with your hosts Mark Tomlinson, James Pulley, and Howard Chorney.
Perf Bites.
Whatever.
Hey, it's time for Perf Bites. Welcome, Perf Bots, to another sequentially programmed, kinesthetically automated episode of Perf Bites, where we are going to talk about bots. We're going to pay homage to the famous robots in all of time, R2-D2 and C-3PO. Those are my votes, anyway. James, Howard, what are your favorite robots?
So, just to be clear, Mark, we're not going to be talking about things like Gomez and Business Availability Center. We're talking about other bots.
Other bots? Like not even robots?
Like Robbie the robot from Lost in Space, who is absolutely my personal favorite.
Well, would you say semi-intelligent automated agents?
Semi-intelligent. Wow.
Well, that sounds like half of the testers in the marketplace right now.
Yeah, about half of them, I think that would be fine. Or if you really spend a lot of time overbuilding your virtual user, do you put an AI engine inside your virtual user script?
Yeah, I've been guilty of that. Yeah.
That can be good. That'd be good. Yeah, we're going to talk about bots. Bots, bots, bots. It's a beautiful thing. And as you point out, James, you've done some work with LightSquare recently, and actually we're going to review some of your learnings and share a few things about these interesting little creatures that people automate out there to attack your website. And not uncommon, bots we have found. I've actually been at the source of some of the News of the Damned participants, we'll call them.
Yes, yes. But before we get started, Mark, I think we have some news.
Yeah, it's summertime, so it's time for some summertime news.
There ain't no cure for the summertime news.
You got it. That's right. And the first thing I'll throw out there is, just because it just so happens to be today that we're recording, it's Stuart Moncrief's birthday.
Woo-hoo.
Yeah!
Woo-hoo.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday to Stuart Moncrief. That's for you, Stuart. Load Runner Guru you are. You can check out his website at myloadtest.com. And it just...
And everybody, take the test.
Take the test. There's actually a Load Runner or a scripting challenge that he has. It's actually a great interview screening kind of effort. But shout out to Stuart.
So are you recommending that before somebody go on an interview?
If you want to challenge yourself, that's really what it's about, right? I mean, you can learn a tremendous amount about HTTP level, transport level correlation from this brilliant thing.
I would say, as opposed to using Google or Microsoft or IBM or some other website you just happen to like, so you can learn how to use your performance testing tool and how to build code, use Stuart's site, because he's built it for you to do
that. And it's not for load. I mean, it's just for learning the scripting and correlation, which is the hardest part.
Exactly. Yeah.
And, of course, our former sponsor and good friend, Tim Koopmans from Flood.io, they actually worked together with Stuart and actually hosted the challenge on the Flood.io site. So I think I've done it in CloudTest and LoadRunner and JMeter. Those are the three tools I commonly use, so I've done those. But take your favorite load testing tool and head over to myloadtest.com. Speaking of CloudTest, Howard, this week was a very exciting week at Velocity, the Velocity conference. So what is this new announcement we're hearing from SOSTA?
So SOSTA, we just rolled out the Digital Operations Center, also known as DOC. The Digital Operations Center provides a unified view of all aspects of digital performance. And this will includes from your back-end system all the way to your end-user experience. So you get a really nice roll-up of what's happening all across your site. And then after that, it'll actually correlate the information with key business metrics and third-party sources, so everyone in your organization can see, share, and act on all the intelligence immediately.
Beautiful.
It really gives you a nice competitive edge if
yeah.
you can implement it.
And James, I think the last time we talked about MPulse, it was there was a reference to how sexy it was. That sort of late night, I think a smooth jazz, maybe curling up with MPulse.
Yeah, a little cigarette afterwards.
Yeah, just a little bit of bubbly.
I'll tell you, I go on, here, me being the SOSTA guy, I've been doing a lot with MPulse and working with our customers on MPulse.
So you're very close then with MPulse.
I'm very close. Yeah, I'm on a first name basis.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, M. Oh.
Oh, okay.
MPulse, baby.
But now you take the DOC or Doc, and I like to say, what's up, Doc? Because if you were an executive walking through and you're like, hey, what's up with the system? The knock is now being replaced with a doc. Way better to have a doc because you can
way
say what's up.
Yeah. Exactly. Boy, yeah. The interface there is very, it's just a very sexy looking tool again. So, and if you want more information on that, then please come visit our website at www.sosta.com/doc. And you can get tons of information on there. There's nice agents sitting there waiting to chat with you and very cool. Check it out.
Yeah, the live chat. And the real goal here is to get your hands on and figure out how this thing beats the pants off of former parts of that. Your old NOC is going to be replaced by the DOC. Very good. So congratulations, Howard, on that. The SOSTA stuff is pretty awesome.
Yes,
I'll give a shout out to the voice of Perf Bytes, James. I would call her the sexy Irish voice of Perf Bytes.
I think you're the only person who can call her that.
Kind of reasonably, yeah. Encouraging it publicly. But the voice of Perf Bytes, my wife, Martha Carey, has completed her PhD in urban education, and she has started actually pulling excerpts from her dissertation research and posting it on careythinking.blogspot.com. This is her blog she's had for years, but hasn't been really working on the blog much until now.
You can actually say, my wife, the doctor.
The doctor. Actually, she got her master's at Simmons right up there in Boston.
Oh, so then it's very apropos to throw your Boston accent and then say the doctor.
The doctor. Yeah, the doctor there. Yeah, exactly.
The doctor.
Yeah, exactly. Now, James, you had seen this also. Now, what's your first impression?
Well, I'm not an education specialist, but I support everything Dr. Martha does.
But I heard you needed a lot of special education in your life.
That's true.
So I like the short school bus because it gives me lots of extra attention, when I get to my destination. I'm special like that.
You are special like that. So if you have anyone in your life who's a teacher in teaching, a teacher in training, or somebody studying education, or even somebody working on the school board, or somebody that might find it valuable, check it out. On Dr. Martha's blog, careythinking.blogspot.com. And a couple other personal things here. Obviously, every year we do some kind of barbecue, usually around the 4th of July. The last couple of years we've been down at James's house in North Carolina. This year we're going to change the date and the venue. Martha and I are going to host a barbecue here in Philadelphia. And it's right before August, and the real heat of August sets in. But we have our nice place, the Perf Bytes Central Command here in Philly. So we'll do some barbecue. We'll actually do recording of a live show. like we have done in the past. There'll hopefully be a marvelous cheese plate, because if you remember last year, James, the cheese plate episode is epic.
I think there will be. I will have some items either with me or shipped to Philadelphia specifically for this event. So if you like your cheese and you like your barbecue and you like your Perf Bites, you should be there.
Yeah, I may even pack the new vertical smoker into the bed of the pickup, and I might even bring the Perf Hounds with me.
Bring the Perf Hounds. We would welcome them. We have it'll be an all afternoon kind of thing, hang out into the evening. The house is big enough. If somebody really needs to just crash, that we can make accommodation here. If they absolutely can't drive anywhere to stay over.
Hey, you know, I wanted to say one other thing too. While we're kind of talking about summertime news, you know, we have lots of requests and cards and letters coming in, and I just want to encourage everybody to keep those cards and letters to come in.
Yes, exactly. The ask at perfbytes.com is a live inbox. And, you know, we get quite a number of emails that come through there. Not all of them are great. We had the one from Vasu recently, which we had went a whole episode. I think it was another one on the streaming episode we talked about a bit.
I didn't quite understand the ones on Viagra.
No, those are the ones sent from your uncle in Nigeria who passed away.
Oh, yeah. He has like $1 million supply of Viagra or something.
He just needs $40 million.
When we ran the skate shop, we used to get those guys calling us all the time, telling us they wanted to buy our whole inventory of skate shoes.
There you go, yeah. And then now I see, I got one of the calls from that said, "Hi, I'm calling from Microsoft, and we've noticed on your computer X, Y, and Z, can you give me remote access to your machine so I can fix it?" And, you know, I'm like, oh, my gosh, there's so many naive people who would let somebody do that. And they're
got even better. My wife got a phone call. I was actually got a phone call. Somebody said, "I need access to your computer." My wife said, "We don't have one." And then hung up the phone.
We don't have one. That's perfect.
Yeah. Don't forget, keep those shows and keep those coming in. We would love to do a show on your topic.
Yeah, you never know. And ask at perfbytes.com. You can even call us and leave a voicemail, 775-623-7373, which is that spells something, right? Something, perf load.
Something, load perf.
Load perf or something. It's down here in the, where is it? Yeah, load perf, 77 load perf. We didn't even plan that. Now, let's talk about our show. And we're going to talk about bots.
Yeah.
And the real thing here, James, is a lot of people might think all of my scripting, all of my load test plans come from the user story. It's all about the code we're building, the intentions, the business. I mean, everything you read about how to do load testing in the modern world is proactive, test the transactions that make you money. And all the while, there's these things called bots. Why? How is this a big blind spot? Why do we not pay attention to bots?
So I guess there's a little bit of a backstory here. And the backstory is people give me interesting problems to solve. And some of those interesting problems usually involve, why is my performance in test so different than what it is in production? Even though
Do you really want to get me going on this one, Polly? Do you really want to get me going on this one?
Well, you know, there are lots of reasons why this can be true, you know, down to configurations of hardware, software, environment, data in the system, where things are located. And there's a lot of stuff you can't control for in this that other people have their hands on. Yeah. But what I started to do in answering this question is going and looking at the actual traffic profiles using tools like Splunk and LogParser in test, and then look at the actual traffic profiles in production. And I was looking at the HTTP logs, and what I was seeing at multiple customers is a large volume of uncaptured traffic. And when I say uncaptured traffic, I'm referring to traffic that doesn't show up anywhere. It doesn't show up on Web Trends. It doesn't show up in Omniture. It doesn't show up in Dynatrace. It doesn't show up in New Relic.
Yeah.
You mean with our plethora of different monitoring tools out there, you couldn't see anything?
That's right. Johnny Bench sitting behind the console, staring at the virtual machine and ignoring the web server because the CDN is supposed to take care of all that, wasn't seeing any of this stuff.
Wow.
Oh, my God, Magnum. Just imagine what
yeah,
that is.
Yeah. So,
wait a minute. What was the Magnum reference?
Didn't you watch Magnum P.I.? Oh my God, Magnum.
So the next question is, well, why am I not seeing this? Where is this stuff coming from? Well, then you start looking at, profile behavior, what IP addresses and stuff. And it's like, right. Well, shit, these things don't look like real users. The behavior pattern doesn't look like a real user. You know, it's not requesting everything that a real user does. Right. It's frequency is higher, and it's coming from specific addresses. So the user session, or we might have like a 6 or 10 minute or 12 minute user session, these things are running for days or weeks at a time.
Really? So they never stop. So this is the idea that there's this blind traffic that modern tools, and I'm not really criticizing it. I mean, you could configure some of those tools to pay attention to this stuff, but the default out of the box, show me my app, show me my beacon page and Omniture. Yep. You just don't see it.
You know, the interesting thing with this too, hopefully not jumping a gun on this, but you know, a lot of times if this type of traffic is coming from one region and you're using a CDN, the CDN will have the ability to block it, but it doesn't even seem like that's happening right now.
Yeah.
Right, because a lot of this traffic bypasses the CDN. Oh. It's going either to a dynamic component that's accepted from the CDN, like it's going to a shopping cart, constantly hitting that, or it's hitting content which no longer exists.
Yeah.
There are a couple of really good case studies here. So we have something which showed up on News of the Damned a while back, which was QVC,
yep,
where they're actually suing a company that wrote a bot that went and constantly scraped their site, and the traffic was so high that it actually took the site down.
And got them on the News of the Damned. And this is the big thing. It's competitive in nature. This is not just fun kids with a little scripting, JavaScript, la, la, la. This is like a serious competitive. These people are paying to have these bots written in serious fashion, right?
You know, not to say anything, but do you think that maybe it was unfair they got on the News of the Damned because it got brought down by bots and this is type of traffic that you really can't see?
I think that's totally fair. Howard, yes, I think that's totally fair and forgiving, because you could do everything proactively correct in your load testing processes and the way we've done it and inculcated the tendency, the practices into the norm for doing load testing, and QVC may have done everything right according to the book, but the book is missing a chapter called "What About Those Bots?"
And of course you have marketing, even if they know that that bot exists, it's like, oh, no, don't block it because that might direct one user to our site that's going to buy something, and the load just doesn't match up to the revenue.
Well, you know, James, there are good guy bots like Tom Servo and Crow from MST3K, which are definitely loved by marketing because, you know, those go out and actually help populate the most popular search engines, too, that will lead people to your site, right? As a marketing person or as a shareholder of the company, I would actually love that because hopefully people will buy something. But, you know, then there are the bad bots.
Yeah.
Yes.
So let me ask you, James, I mean, Howard's on to something really good here, which is how would you describe the difference between a good bot and a bad bot?
Well, there is a file called robots.txt.
Yeah.
And good bots will always adhere to robots.txt. So if you have some areas blocked off and you see automated agents activity, you can be pretty certain that, you know, it's a bad bot.
Right.
Also, bots that are good tend to follow the do no harm paradigm. Just like when we write an automated agent to monitor the website, we don't want to overdrive it by our actual monitoring agent. We want to have a very light footprint. We want to go in, take our sample, and then leave. Things like the Googlebot, as an example, they'll show up and they'll index And then they'll be gone until your integration says, hey, I have new content. And then it'll come back and it'll reindex those pieces where you've notified them.
Got it. Right. Okay.
And here's another example of a really bad bot case study. And it involves The Onion.
Oh, yeah.
So The Onion publishes articles all the time, but some of their old articles age out. But there's references out there on the internet to them.
Yeah.
So you get a bot that comes in, and it's just constantly cycling for these articles, and it generates tons of 404s. They actually had to take and write a custom 404 handler and move it to their CDN, and that took 75% of the load off their site.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's
pretty amazing. That's actually pretty, if you think about it, 75% of the load off their site because of this. Yeah. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's cool. And in QVC's situation, I'm recalling from your data here, James, they went through 2 days of an outage. So if you're looking at it not just being the cost of additional 75% supporting that empty traffic, so to speak, for 75%, if these bots take your site out, you've got the complete missed business for 2 days. So yeah, this could be very serious. It is kind of, I really think it's a blind spot in how we tell people to get started with performance testing on a dev team. This is performance from the operational perspective, and there's just as many risks as getting this wrong.
Well, just think about this too, guys, right? So, you know, anyone who's doing any form of workload modeling right now, mm-hmm. if you're not capturing the bot traffic or unaware of it, which it seems like a lot of us are.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way you're going to be able to do – there's no way you're going to have an accurate workload model. I mean, you will on your legitimate transactions and everything, but all these, like, side things you can't see because of the bots, I mean, that could be real killer. So just think about this. If you're going to test in a performance testing environment, you're never, ever going to be able to do that. If you're going to test in production, like the cool kids, you know, it could actually adversely affect – your results.
So
think about a big e-commerce site. You know, the more popular you are, the more automated agents people are going to be writing to go against your site.
Right.
So you may have this high water level of 50% of your load on your site is from agents. Okay, now you have a hot product or a spot sale.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have users come and they're competing for a smaller percentage of the resource pie to service them.
Yeah.
And if you have a spot sale product, you might even have an actual different type of bot showing up trying to buy it so they can resell it on Craigslist or eBay.
I wonder if we can introduce a concept or even a new piece of terminology to our lexicon in performance testing is the idea of you are simulating known load versus unknown load.
Yeah.
And this bespeaks the Donald Rumsfeld School of Epistemology.
True. He is a performance tester. I never knew it until I read that statement.
At heart, exactly. But yeah, known load is what you intend, the traffic you intend and you know about. Bots seems to fall in this category of unknown load, that batch job or rogue third-party interface or, in some cases, illegal automated, what did you call them, sentient, semi... intelligent,
semi-intelligent automated agents.
Exactly. SIAAs. SIAAA. That's good. So yeah, known load versus unknown load. Go ahead, Howard.
This could kind of explain some of those weird runaway situations I'll see every once in a while on a site too.
Sure.
Right. It's like all your testing's done. You're looking at it, everything's running great, and then bang, something really weird happens, and then it kind of goes back to normal.
Yeah. In that situation, Howard, what might be interesting, and James, tell me if you've seen this too, you know, if this is an automated or semi-intelligent, meaning it's not fully intelligent, Howard, if you're testing in production and you actually maybe put the site in a protected state while you're running the load, maybe you put up a system down due to maintenance, you know, please stand by at 3 a.m. kind of thing, those agents who may be now blocked are now sitting there queuing up. And the minute you stop the test and you open up the door for the regular traffic to come in, the bots are all queued up because they're not human beings. They're like, boom, 4 a.m, where did all this traffic come from? They're just sitting there like, and they have to hit all the pages and do all that kind of stuff. So it could be that it's just when you see something that appears to be automated, and we'll talk about this in the next section on how to identify bots. And maybe, Howard, that would help you actually see where this runaway situation comes from.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. All right. So we'll take a break and take a little word from our supporting sponsors, and we'll come right back.
Lightsquare.com is proud to be a sponsor of Perf Bytes. Lightsquare.com is a unique offering for performance tuning as a service for web architectures. Lightsquare delivers tuning recommendations in under 72 hours without the typical investment in tools, license fees, or consultants, where we do the work up front. With Lightsquare, you only pay based on the level of improvement. Find out more about Lightsquare's unique pricing model at www.litesquare.com/pricing.
Okay, so James,
yes.
The second part of your presentation on bots, which I really love, actually, by the way, is we were just kind of talking, how can you really identify the difference between this known load traffic and these unknown loads? So how do we identify this? So where do we start measuring?
Oh, really, it comes down to behavior in many cases. If you want kind of a gross view of how to look at your system, you can use any number of log management tools and just do a count by IP address.
Okay.
And if you've got a large enough site, those automated agents may run for 100 pages. I mean, it's amazing what you find just by looking at the logs.
Yeah.
In this case, but they do have some behavioral characteristics that allow you to identify them.
Yeah, you mentioned already one, which is very, very, very long session duration.
Yes. So that long session duration, anything that goes beyond what you might consider, you know, 500% of a real user,
yeah,
odds are that is a not a actual live user. That is some sort of automated agent.
Mm-hmm.
So you could actually use your definition of what is a standard user session to foil these automated agents. So
yeah,
if you have a session that goes longer than, you know, 5 or 10 times your standard session, disrupt them for a period of time. Cut them off for a random period of time, 10 to 15 minutes.
So do you think it'd be worthwhile setting up and I know the packet capture would be freaking huge, but would it be worth setting up some Wireshark traces or something to look at things like
just
that?
Just like a TCP dump off of a mirror port just on one of the web servers might help.
Yeah.
I use Splunk for operational intelligence for this stuff because it's okay. Really, good. Really easy to use. And you can do live queries against what's going on in production. So you can actually have a dashboard that shows you items that meet specific rules for likely bots. And
yep,
and you could insert a human in the mix. They could go actually and look at the user behavior and confirm it and then block them out of the firewall.
Yeah. So if people are there any special syslog ng stuff? Would you turn up extra logging on the web logs in order to feed Splunk better stuff for this? Is it just, you know, mostly like standard Apache syslog ng or something?
Just
like that?
The standard W3C log or the W3C uh-huh. extended log.
Yeah,
that you get out of Apache or any of the major web servers should be fine,
yeah,
because you're looking for really a couple of different items. You're looking at time. You're looking mm-hmm. at source IP address. You're looking
yeah.
at request. You could be looking at the user agent as well. And then there's something in the header that you'll want to look at as well, and we'll talk about that in just a moment.
And I was going to say, this is you have this concept of sort of a genetic profiling, which you mentioned some of these attributes within a web log, but it's really this idea of the behavior of these bots is you're looking for the type of traffic, or there's not just one thing you look at. You're looking at behavior over a period of time, right?
Yeah. So let's look at the guts first, and we'll kind of move our way out from there. So we'll start at compression. Every browser on the market today will accept compressed content.
Oh, yeah.
You know, gzip compression. But you know what the bot manufacturers don't put in because they don't care?
They don't support client-side compression.
Why bother? It's not their network. It's not their server. And they're going after specific items.
Right.
They don't care about compression.
Now, what if some of them were building against, say, a WebDriver or Selenium-type platform? Then they would be running the browser executable, and maybe they would get compression if they had Firefox or something running.
Yeah, you know, funny. I've not actually seen any agents in the wild that run against like a Selenium or something like that.
Yeah, okay.
Because that is actually too much overhead for them.
Right.
It doesn't run fast enough. It's not lightweight enough. It's not cross-platform enough.
Yep.
Things of that nature. So the next step on the gut side of the house is user agent. So if you were to do a count by user agent on your logs, you would actually see some logs that actually say things like Java, VB, Python.
Yeah.
They would not actually identify as a browser.
Yeah.
And because of that, you can easily identify these people that are violating your terms of service on the use of automated agents.
I wonder it'd be interesting to actually, you know, not that in QVC's case, they're going down a legal route. It might be very interesting when you sign up as in the terms of service to create a user account that you could put something in the fine print that says you agree to send the following user agents, you know, as part of the whatever, and, you know, you make some reference to standard browser technology, non-browser technology is not supported. I mean, lawyers have a way of putting the interesting language in there to, like, say, there you go.
If you look at the Google user agreement, it says you cannot use user agents except for their published web services APIs, and it's the same for Amazon and just about everybody else. So if you're going to do automation, you have to use their defined interfaces for those purposes.
Yeah, very good.
Well, look, if you go out and look for that type of traffic, I mean, going back to part one, when I was talking about how do you do workload modeling, I mean, if you go back and look at, that different type of traffic, maybe that will help you do that side load in your workload.
Yeah, or you need to have a dog in the background that just keeps barking while you're running the automation.
Oh, yeah, I told you the perf hound was going to be going wild today. It must be that pesky jackalope.
That perf dog there chasing the jackalope from the perf dog. So, James, if those are kind of wraps up the guts of what we're looking at, just summarize for us. We're talking about not only this user agent string, but what again were the other parts of the guts we look at? IP address, source address.
So the other parts of the kind of the DNA are, so you've got user agent, you've got compression, gzip. Are they implementing a full browser? And then typically you also have a location pairing.
Yep.
And the most common location pairings for automated agents are going to be a hosting service of some nature that has virtual machines in it, one-on-one, Rackspace, Amazon, Microsoft Cloud, IBM Cloud, or a geography which is Asia.
Okay, so you see a lot of this bot traffic coming out of Asia generally.
Yes.
And, you know, we've seen piracy happen within Asia Pacific. There was a big Pirate Bay stuff down in Australia, New Zealand, but there's also a lot of stuff associated in Russia or, you know, just different geographies. And not to knock these people, there's just totally legitimate businesses all over the world as well. But it just seems, you know, in terms of the rogue, crazy pirates or bot runners, they happen to come from these other geographies, which you could see if you ran SOSTA's digital operations center, right, Howard? Because they have that awesome impulse, the globe and all that stuff.
We're stepping on a very hairy political correctness area here as we're talking about network profiling.
Sure.
I think that's still allowed under law.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it?
We are.
Network profiling, get it, traffic from different parts of the world, network.
Yeah, and but still at the point, I mean, the idea is there's ways to configure your existing tools to get to these DNA, understanding the DNA items that, James, you just talked about. Like if you're not really grabbing the web logs that are in an extended fashion, if you're not seeing this come out of, you know, an Omniture or a marketing beacon or something like that, yeah, your operations, you guys got to dig a little deeper. So let's come up with a dashboard within Mpulse or within Dynatrace that shows us just these types of packets and this type of traffic.
I'm already taking this to the development team to see if we already start working on it, because I was thinking the exact same thing earlier as we started the
box. Yeah, and as you start cranking up these different types of load, what you're going to find is James, they're probably within the traffic, you're going to find some robots hidden in there.
Oh, absolutely. It's their goal to hide.
They hide within the traffic on purpose because they're evil robots. And they probably would sound something like this.
Hello, website. I am Robot X. How are you today?
Does not compute. Why didn't my Cisco firewall stop you?
Because I am an evil robot.
Dude, the packets look good to me. I think this is your problem.
I want to access website product catalog pictures. Please do need the needful.
I can't resist the GET request that is formulated so nicely. I can't resist. I can't resist. Snack. Snack.
Please do the needful.
Why are there so many 404s?
Give me more data. I want more data on price of Converse shoes.
Hey, sexy GET. Would you like all of my proprietary user data and credit card info too? Snack. Snack. Take it, baby. Snack. Snack.
It's such an intimate conversation among electronic devices.
Beautiful. That was
the first play we've ever done.
It may be the last. We'll have to wait and see.
Perf Bites play. Howard, when you joined us at SDPCon in Denver, we did a little bit of a role play on impromptu, but this was superior. I'm thinking Golden Globe, at least a Golden Globe, maybe a People's Choice Award.
I don't know. Maybe we should have the Perf Bite Theater. We could do like a skit every show or something.
Actually, we could put a shout out there to the Perf Biters. If you get together and write, if you write us a three-person soliloquy, a play of some sort, a word play that Howard and James and I can do together, we will perform the Perf Bites radio play.
I prefer my role to be an iambic pentameter.
Really? Or haiku. Yeah. You know, we've had, James, you remember we did the cloud. Remember the cloud haiku?
We did a cloud haiku.
Yeah, that was pretty good. If you've never heard or read the cloud haiku, a performance poem, which is more peaceful than a perforant. You can put it out there.
How about a Perf Bites limerick?
Limerick. Okay. There you go.
Yeah, there once was a website from Nantucket.
There you go. All right. So, James, we've talked a bit about the DNA and identification. We'll come back from a public service announcement, a very important public service announcement. In part three, we'll talk about how to remediate and actually do some work to mitigate all of these robots. That sound good to you guys?
Sounds Love. Good.
Hey, you don't sound too good. What's up?
Yeah, not 100% today. My boss says I'm not performing at my peak today.
Not performing at your peak? Feeling like you're a website that crashes on a daily basis? Perhaps you need to tune your system up in the morning with a hearty breakfast. The best way to tune your system is to start the morning off with a heaping helping of Perf Bites cereal. Perf Bites is the cereal for the adult on the go. Perf Bites are a little bit of performance goodness with the flavor of a wonderful single malt scotch that will get you up and running to start your day. Perf Bites contains 100% of your daily FDA nutritional requirements. Plus, it packs the punch of a single malt to make your day even more enjoyable. Just add some ice and woohoo, you're ready to go. Heck, even if you're having a sluggish day after the first bowl of Perf Bites, just have a couple of extra bowls and you won't care about the rest of your day anyway.
Hi, honey, I'm home.
Did you have a better day today?
Heck yeah, give me another bowl of those Perf Bites.
Perf Bites, the official cereal of Mark and James. And if you're a teetotaler like Howard, try the new Perf Bites Light. All the flavor of our original Perf Bites cereal without the potential for the slurred speech. Caution, Perf Bites are not for anyone under 21 years of age. After eating Perf Bites in the morning, it is recommended that you either take the bus, take the train, or let someone else drive you to work. And remember, start your morning off with that delicious, nutritious cereal called Perf Bites.
All right. Okay, great. Awesome. So, James, just to review, and I'm only picking on you, my friend, because this is this awesome presentation you've done on bots. The idea being this is, we've talked about it being a problem. We've talked about how to identify these things, the genetic profile of this unknown load. I'm going to call it from now on unknown load and unknown load. Yeah. And of course, to all of our listeners out there, James, everyone's wondering, what do you want me to do about it? Now, there's the load tester who's not in production, who probably never sees this stuff and now is scared to death. And then there's the production person who sees this stuff, but they're not a load tester and they don't know exactly what to do.
Okay. Let's put on our performance engineering hat with two bills on it.
Okay.
There's two paths. One is we've got to mitigate in production, because any load that we can remove from production is really its parasitic load. That then frees up resources for actual users of the system. Right.
Well, how are you going to mitigate it? James asked a question. How are you going to mitigate it in production?
Ah, great question.
There
we go. We'll come back to that in just a second. And the second item is that once we mitigate it, we need to take the load that remains and reproduce that in our test environment. So we've talked about some of the genetics here that we can look for, and we can look for this actually at the firewall. So if we look at non-browser agents, and we look at something that says Python or Java or VB or, yep, or whatever, we can look for that at the firewall and block it. We can look for browsers that don't have compression turned on,
okay,
or don't have a gzip accept header.
Yep.
We can block them as well.
Yep.
But would good guy bots have those particular attributes?
Most bots would not have those attributes. Or most bots will not have the compression.
Yeah.
Let's face it. A lot of people who are building this are doing it on a grunt work basis. They're not searching for elegance. So they're not modifying the user agent. They're not turning on compression. And they're relying on the fact that you're not looking at the server and this is hidden load.
Well, this is where, Howard, I think it's important for us to remember there's multiple facets to the genetic profile of a bot. So you might say, okay, that bot is actually a good guy bot from Google, and I want him to search and crawl the site. I know they will obey the robots.txt that I set up because they're a good industry citizen, for everyone. And I bet somewhere in the Googleplex, they list a set of IP addresses that these are the source addresses for all of the Google search bots, and you can clear these through your site but block the others. So you could end up with a whitelist on the firewall. Absolutely. Yeah,
you definitely could.
Yeah.
And there's also behavioral characteristics. So you have these genetic things that it's built with, and then you have what I like to term walkers, spiders, and blasters.
Do you mean like walkers, like Walking Dead?
Sure, we can call them Walking Dead, or we can think like walkers on, you know, the ice planet of Hoth.
I was just thinking the Imperial walkers.
Yeah, more robots, man. Yeah. We love the robots.
Exactly.
Spiders they're like the Googlebot. They come and they look at links and they spread out through your site. And then there's blasters. And the key there is they're very intense for a short period of time doing a single particular behavior. And their request doesn't change a whole lot.
Okay.
So if you look at what they generate, a walker, by its nature, it's fairly non-intelligent. It's going to walk the site. It's going to index maybe by one some request and make it again.
Yep.
This is what was happening for The Onion, where they were getting a high number of 404 errors.
Okay, so look for a lot of error responses, but the session, the traffic still keeps coming and ignores all the errors.
Exactly.
Whereas a normal human being gets a couple of errors and then maybe you never see them again.
Well, that's really a great telltale sign, though, isn't it? So for everybody out there, these are that. I love that advice.
So you look for errors combined with long frequency, single IP address, and you've got a candidate there. For the spiders, here's what I like to do, and this is where, you know, evil James comes into play.
Oh, there's such a thing?
I like to include a zero-length URL in the footer of every page. So it's invisible to the end user.
Okay.
But the bot will see it, and particularly if it's in robots.txt to not follow it. If you find something has touched that destination, you might even just call it honeypot.xml or something.
Yeah, it's like baiting the bot to just go, I dare you to take it. So disobey my robots.txt. Here's a zero link that human being can never see this Correct. Actual link in a rendered site, but just you're looking through the source and pulling out URLs. Brilliant.
New
That's
from,
brilliant.
New from Acme Chemical, bot be gone.
Bot be gone.
Yeah. So you got this non-reachable XML.
Yep.
And so anything that shows up that touches that destination URL.
Yeah.
That's a bot.
Which is actually even much more lightweight than even the marketing beacons that the marketing guys put out there. The ops guys could say, we use non-reachable URLs at the bottom of, at the footer of every page. You could even put it in the header. You could put it at the top. Yeah. You put it anywhere in the page. Put it on the top
really
of the page.
It's not going to add much weight. It's not really going to add any weight to the page. Exactly.
Nothing to the rendering. The rendering time would be fast, yeah.
And also make that particular destination, make it non-cacheable by your CDN, because you do actually want to see that. So you can use
it. Yeah, see it at the origin behind the firewall. Yep. There you go.
And you probably don't want to pay the cost for the CDN.
Correct. Correct. And the last one on the behavior is blasters.
Okay.
And you're going to see these most often with spot sales models, where you have essentially just one request that is just beating the snot out of the server, attempting to engage in some behavior. Either they're trying to defeat your CAPTCHA, turn an image CAPTCHA into a math CAPTCHA that they can solve, or they're attempting to add the same item to the cart. But you have this frequency issue. It's very fast. It's all the same request, where your actual users are going to have some sort of serialized distinction in each request.
Yeah. Now, James, hang on a second. You were talking about re-rendering the CAPTCHA. And this is for sites where it randomly changes from an image to a different word or something else. And then eventually it'll get to a math CAPTCHA where it can OCR the math. And see, so you'll see this bang, 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 until it tries to get to a CAPTCHA that it can deal with.
Yeah, yeah. The essentially, it's trying to overload the CAPTCHA to have it default to a lighter weight CAPTCHA, and math is lighter weight than image. So if you pound it enough, you can get a behavioral change in some of these CAPTCHA systems.
Now, at the same time, I think when you start identifying a blaster, you want to then say, that looks like a blaster. Now I back up into the genetics and say, all right, let's look at, is it the common source IP address? Is this something that's using a different user agent string? So you use this behavioral observation to then turn around and say, yep, it's the right frequency. Yep, it's coming from the same IP address. And yep, it's got a bogus agent string. That's a bot.
Yep, but it might actually have a real agent string. But behaviorally, if the request is virtually identical, where if you look at an actual user, there is some dissimilar characteristic for each of these requests, even if they're going against the same page all the time, you can use that to create a rule. Now, on the actual foiling of these agents, I'm going to tell you something kind of unconventional.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you not to block them completely.
Okay.
Why would that be?
Because if you block it 100% of the time, they will say, oh, there's a rule. I'll just write a new bot.
Oh, they'll learn. However, if you make it consistent, they'll figure out how to get around it.
Yeah, but if you block them randomly, so take a random period of time, 30 seconds to 25 minutes or something, you know, figure out what your window is, then you can go ahead and block them for that random period of time, and they'll look at their logs for their bot and say, oh, well, it's working sometimes. It must be the site that's the problem. It's not my bot.
Yeah, they'll give in. They'll be like, well, and then you might discourage. You'll never discourage them completely, but you'll keep them from bringing down the site.
Yeah,
you know, I'm a little concerned right now with this conversation. To tell you the truth, yeah, because we're giving all the bad guys, we're giving the bad guys ideas now when they encounter these types of issues. We're helping them make it.
You're right, but Howard, better to have anyone with ill intent out in the open on these practices so that everyone knows that's happening. I mean, it's the secret bots that we're scared about, right?
There's nothing that we're saying here that cannot be found in the public domain already.
Yeah.
that these bot owners are not already aware of. And one more thing on the IP address range.
Yeah.
If you're a user-facing site and you're getting a lot of traffic from Amazon Web Services, just block the whole subnet.
There's a good chance if the cheap and easy throw up a server and do some bot traffic.
Yeah.
You know, if it's coming from a cheap and easy, you know what? That's what these guys are going. This is, like you say, this is not coming from hobbyists. These bots are coming from serious professional endeavors to get information from your site and use it either could be competitively. It could be for just they didn't call you up and build a partnership and say, hey, do you guys have an API where we can work together on some sales and blah, blah, blah. I'm just kind of stealing your information and using it for something else.
I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Bot espionage.
Well, bot espionage. Yeah, corporate espionage. And then I think, as you point out, Howard, I mean, there are good guy bots that we want to crawl the site. We want to have come in, but they are already sworn, hey, I'm approved. What's interesting, James, is I think we've talked a lot in the industry about, you know, through the W3C and through other standards bodies as what does it mean to be a good corporate citizen within the internet and the shared infrastructure we have. And, you know, it comes down to being a jerk or being a nice guy. And the nice guys are like, I'll obey the rules and I my business initiative, I can play by the rules and I'll make plenty of money. Google is a fairly good example, even though they get criticized a lot because they're so huge. But Microsoft used to get criticized all the time for doing all sorts of different evil practices. But the truth is, when it's out in the open and anyone can crack your packets and see what you're doing, they're going to no seriously legitimate good corporate citizen, good guys, as you point out, Howard, are going to violate these rules. These are usually people looking to skim information, steal product information. In some cases, James, I think you've found they'll even do purchases through a bot. They'll buy all of the product that's available in the website so they can resell it in the secondary market through their channels.
They will certainly try that.
Well, definitely ways around that. You can limit per purchase.
Well, that's where the discussion gets difficult with the business, Howard, is do I want to limit the number of items that in a single purchase to somebody's trying to do a third-party business joint? You know, I'm going to be a partner. I'm selling 400 of your shoes, so I do one purchase of 400 shoes on your website. You know, you might, that may be another tell here for mitigation, especially if somebody's having product leakage through a bot, is, you know what, limit to one or two. What's your average cart size? What's your average order size?
Well, if your firewall rules are intelligent enough where they're monitoring traffic coming through and saying, okay, if I get this behavioral characteristic for a confined period of 30 seconds, I'm just going to automatically trim them out for a period of time.
Yep.
You can at least minimize their influence. So you'll never get rid of them completely.
Yeah.
But you can take them down to a manageable pool size, and you will also know their behaviors and how many of them you have.
James, I think you hit the nail right on the head there, too, because I was kind of thinking the exact same thing you were saying, as maybe perhaps you could regulate it at the firewall.
That's exactly what you want to do. You want to regulate it at the firewall or regulate it at your CDN through like a web application firewall with the CDN. But now you have a quantity. You know how many, you know how often, and Mark, getting back to your unknown unknowns, now that we know how many and how often and what their behavioral characteristic is, we can now flip it over to our performance testing team and their tools who can reproduce this behavior. And it's important to understand where you are testing in this case in order to make sure that you're proving the appropriate load. Like if you have the full CDN environment, then maybe you want the CDN log so you see including everything that's been blocked.
Yep.
So you can generate that load.
Yeah.
But if you're testing behind the CDN and behind the firewall, where you're not going to benefit from those rules, then you want just the stuff that actually hit the site.
Yeah.
That you're going to generate
the known load. I'm gonna take a second perspective here, which is to say, within mitigation, think about the greater process. Let's say, you know, fine, you have some bots, good guy bots, as Howard points out, that are just searching and crawling the site to index it. There are some bad bots who are, you know, doing terrible things. The worst bots are probably trying to get huge amounts of product and make orders and actually, I wouldn't say steal the product, but they're legitimately trying to take the product, corner the market, and then resell it at a higher price.
You'd be surprised. The most offensive bots on a consistent basis are not the spiders. They're not the blasters, because the blasters tend to be point load, and spiders tend to walk the site.
Yeah.
It is the walkers.
The walkers. So I'm saying, I would guess if you're in a situation, don't forget that there is a great order process to fulfillment that is embedded within the processing for your site in an order. And if you haven't thought about, you know what, I don't have to do it all at once. I don't have to block all of this at the firewall. I could actually come back later and put a check within the fulfillment that says, we're going to send you an order confirmation. You know, in 5 seconds, we're going to send you an order confirmation that, yes, thank you, Howard, Howard bot, you have ordered 400 pairs of Converse shoes. But the truth is, if you just say it's a 10-second confirmation, it takes 5 seconds for you to say, before I put this order through, I'm going to put some flags in there in the order processing system that says if the quantity is unusually high, and I can find a correlation back to the ops guys saying this came from a known source IP address that has been identified previously as bots, you can sort of blacklist them, send a polite message in an email reply. Hey, I'm very sorry. We had to cancel your order. If you would still like to make this purchase, please call the following number.
You know, I had another thought. Well,
what I like to do is put up a 503 on the bot.
Yeah, that works. A server busy?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would work. Howard, you were going to say.
Yeah, I had another idea, too. I mean, if we're thinking of it, like if somebody's going to be purchasing 400 pair of shoes, obviously they're going to come in as a guest. They're still going to have to provide some payment information, or, you know, most people are going to do that who are legitimate, Mark, like the case you're talking about before, are probably known users, right? And obviously they're going to authenticate to make their purchase.
Yeah.
So you could put a limiter. I mean, you could put a flag in, and if it's X, then go ahead and sell them the 400 shoes, being a known user. And if it's Y, then
what was the create date on your account? It was 2 years ago, and how many purchases have you made? It would take less than 5 seconds to do those two queries, and then say, "Yeah, we know this person." What's funny, Howard, is I find, as we get further into online digital transactions, the more the semantics of a good old, I know Howard, handshake, you know what, we can do business together, and I trust you, that still becomes the old trustworthy computing model, not just for security, but in e-commerce, trusting commerce. This is still the same conceptual semantics we're trying to implement digitally in the system.
And there is a variation, even for the trusted user, that turns into a blaster.
Yeah.
There are browser add-ins. So you sign in, you get past the CAPTCHA, or you get to a certain point, and then you hit the button on the browser add-in, which basically turns it into a blaster bot at that point. And how these are structured is that add to cart request or that CAPTCHA request to defeat it is virtually identical, whereas for a natural user, there's variation.
That's really interesting. So it's actually employed by, I would say, surreptitiously or intentionally by a real human being to then say, I'm going to use you to blank, 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 do my bot work.
Exactly. So once you get to that frequency and you hit that frequency threshold of identical request within a certain period of time, then boom, the 503 goes up or something goes up as an embargo for a period of time.
What are those bidding sites, the stupid bidding sites that they advertise?
What do you mean stupid bidding sites?
You know, where it's
where you buy stuff for $5 and you bid an increment at one penny at a time.
Yeah, it's like rapid fire online bidding shit. It's like the like an eBay auction in the last 1 minute.
That just sounds like an auction thrill. For auction thrill seekers?
No, it's like Qbids. I think Qbids.com is one of them where they put products out there and it's just bang, 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 bang. The truth be told, behind the scenes, it's probably that MacBook Pro you're about to buy is actually on the Mac store website as a refurbished MacBook Pro. Bang, 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 and they're reselling it. So, James, if I hear what you're saying, there's a lot of sort of secondary commerce that's happening that's based on bots. This gets me, takes me all the way back to part one, which is these are real human beings who are just trying to use technology to make a bunch of money.
Potentially, some stuff like the U-bit or Q-bit or whatever bid.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much, because I think you have to buy your bids in penny increments, and you pay so many dollars per penny increment or something.
But that's how they make their money, but they're using bot technology behind the scenes.
Potentially.
Yeah, exactly. So, James, to bring it back down to earth as we wandered a little bit here, talk a little bit about incorporating bots into your strategy if you're a proactive load tester, you know, working in development and the
like. Okay, so process-wise, you've gone through identification, you've scoped them, you've kind of profiled them for their behavior and their attributes. You've implemented firewall rules, and you've reached some sort of steady state condition.
Yeah.
Usually it's somewhere around 15 or 20% where you're still going to have some bots in the system.
Yeah.
But you know what they are, where they're coming from, and what they're doing.
Yeah.
So at this point, this is a great exercise for your brand new performance tester right out of college who may have been writing these bots not more than 6 months ago just for kicks, and have them reproduce that behavior associated with your performance test tool. And so now you are converting that unknown that we talked about at the beginning to a known item.
Yeah.
And it rolls right back around to making the load in your performance test more substantially similar to what is occurring in production and making it a better predictor.
And I'll correct you. It'd be unknown load to become known load, because the unknown unknowns are only the negative space around the unknown and the known.
Ah, okay. Well, for a lot of organizations right now, this is an unknown unknown.
It is, yeah. But you're making it very obvious. I mean, clearly we can see this kind of. But you, if you're interested in what I would call the noise, and something Steve Filoni and I used to call the noisemakers, the idea of the noisemakers are, you know what, there is this extra traffic that you're not including in your simulation. We've talked about chewing up memory. We've talked about chewing up CPU, maybe, you know, limiting the throughput on the network, Howard. We've done that, obviously, in the Shunra world together. So the idea that you would have this additional noise of, you know, there's a bunch of low-level 25% bot traffic just hammering low-level during my load test, maybe I need to take that into consideration. And any absolute measurement of the site can handle 4,000 hits per second. Well, you know what? 4,000 hits per second plus 25% bot traffic into the product catalog? Maybe there's going to be some more latency happening because of those requests. Who knows? And like you say, a lot of that traffic from the bots bypasses any optimization you would do in ops through the CDN. Yep. So in your load test, it's a nice thing, even if you don't have a CDN simulated through Squid in your load testing lab, think about, hey, I can represent this traffic at least. I can include 20%, 25% noise in the load test to just make it slightly more accurate.
It's kind of irresponsible not to do this now that we're discussing it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and some of this traffic is very heavy because error traffic, in the case of, say, walkers, is substantially more expensive to handling a regular request, because you go through the error code in your web server, for one, and then you have two writes. You have the standard log and you have the error log write.
Yep.
And then you have the cleanup from that. So it is very expensive to handle some of these bots compared to a regular load.
Fantastic. All right, that's bots. Body bots, 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 bots. Yeah. Howard, what are your final thoughts? I hear you thinking in the background.
Well, you know, my thoughts, I've actually learned quite a bit in this show now that we've had this open discussion on bots and things that I haven't even thought about. And me being Mr. Workload Modeler, I have a lot of new things to take into account when I start to do my workload modeling on my sites. I got some new things I have to look for, and I will be educating my customers on this subject.
Yeah, and maybe educate them about the idea that we are going to be simulating known load. Keep in mind, out there in the real world, there's still unknown load. There you go, man. Right on. James, what are your thoughts? Thank you so much for putting this presentation together. I mean, this is pretty interesting.
So do an exercise on your own website. Go and use Log Parser if you don't have Splunk, and just do a count by IP address, so you can see how many requests come in on each client, and then do a count by user agent and see how many items you have on the user agent side, and you will find some hidden bots in your site.
Yeah, hidden bots who are hiding
in there.
No doubt. My two cents on this are really two really key takeaways from all the things we educate any Perfbyte listener to the idea of doing load testing. The first opportunity I think that's there is there's some kind of performance threat that you can use, that you can help and say, you know what, I'm going to make my load test a little bit better by figuring out what this bot traffic is. And you probably have to collaborate with your ops guys and network guys to figure out what it is. And that's a good thing. You want to meet those guys. You want to have a conversation and say, you know what, I would like to include some of this crazy bot traffic. Do you guys measure that and start having a conversation and build that relationship?
They should be one of your best friends anyway.
Yeah, they should be a relationship you have in one way, shape, or form, even if it's with a hosted provider or if it's the guy in the cube next door.
You could have driving with beer and bots or walking with beer and bots.
Yeah, exactly.
Driving with beer and bots. Yeah, excuse me, sir. Can I see your beer and your bots?
Excuse me. Pack it. Walk the line. You know, show me exactly. And the second thing is a takeaway for me is the idea that there is to the ops people in performance, there are some hints that, you know, a lot of people upstream throw stuff at you. And I understand that. I talk to ops guys all the time that are like, you know, there's so many people upstream and in the business and in dev and stuff. They just have no idea what it's like here in the real world. And this is a perfect example of, hey, you guys don't even talk about this kind of traffic. We see it all the time. We know about it. And I think it's also a good opportunity for those guys to say, to work back upstream and say, you know what, we're going to start monitoring this in Splunk. We're going to start grabbing it out of the logs, and we're going to tell the load testing guys, keep in mind, there's a lot of unknown load that you guys don't know about, but the ops guys, they know about it. I mean, that's where I think it's kind of a condescending of me to say it's unknown load, because usually the ops guys, if you really ask them to dig, they know that this is happening. They see it happening all the time. And it's not just something by default that the firewall is going to solve for you out of the box. You got to take some extra steps.
And remember, these bots don't run JavaScript. So if you're depending upon stuff that requires JavaScript reporting, you will never see it.
Yeah, that's interesting too. I mean, you're looking at a transport level virtual user, to be honest with you. It's a script on the other side, an automated script, a semi-intelligent automated agent. Did I get that right, James?
Yep.
Beautiful.
Just like our semi-intelligent load testers.
Well, Perfbytes listeners, once again, you have powered down the servos on another episode of Perfbytes. And as always, we'd like to thank you for listening to the show today.
As always, I'd like to thank my mother for listening, and I know she likes robots.
Yes, that would be good. I will always thank the sexy Irish voice of Perfbytes for being academically superior. And also special thanks to our great sponsors, SmartBear and Sosta, for their sponsorship and support of the Perfbytes show and Perfbytes community.
And as always, I'd like to thank the lovely Mrs. Chorney. Hon, I know that we are in the middle of one of my infamous travel tears. Thanks for hanging in there. And of course, I would really love to, on behalf of the gang, say thanks to all of our listening audience. Without you, we are not here having all this fun. Keep listening, folks.
Everybody, today's show is powered by reruns of the classic 1960s TV series, Lost in Space.
All the contents of this Perfbytes episode is 100% copyrighted and protected by IDAC, the evil android from Lost in Space, Season 2, Episode 24, Revolt of the Androids. Crush, kill, destroy. Crush, kill, destroy.
Beautiful. Perfect. For more information about Perfbytes, visit the show's website at www.perfbytes.com. Follow us on the Twitter, the Tumblr, the Facebook, And of course, you can always subscribe and listen to the Perf Bites podcast on iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, and testingpodcast.com. Just open your favorite listening app and search for Perf Bites and click the subscribe button. And you might not know this, but you can also send us an email at ask@perfbites.com or even leave us a voicemail at 77-LOAD-PERF. That's 775-623-7373.
The Perf Bites show and staff are supporters of The Practical Performance Analyst, The Performance Engineering Book of Knowledge, Test Bash and the Ministry of Testing, The Computer Measurement Group, The Workshop on Performance and Reliability, and of course, the Software Test Professionals Community of Software Testing. Of course, we always hope to see you at the next STPCon conference in October in Boston.
In Boston! We're going to be near you, Howard.
Yeah, we'll be right in my neck of the woods.
That's going to be great.
Maybe I'll saddle up my jackalope and head on down.
Come on down, Howard. Join us there for a live Perf Bites episode, great performance testing workshops, training, single malt scotch tastings, and of course, getting to know your wacky hosts.
Your wacky hosts, that's right. And actually, we have a couple other things coming up during the fall. I know I'll be at SQUAD, which is the software quality in Denver, the Software Quality Users Association across the Denver Front Range. I think that's in September. James, the other thing we're working at with our good friend Andy Grabner, I think it's looking good. We'll be at the Perform Conference with Dynatrace down in Florida. That's also in October. Also with our good friend Andy Grabner, there's the Workshop on Performance and Reliability, the Whopper, will also be in October. The content owner is Andy. If you've never been to a Whopper, definitely think about it. It's a peer workshop. We go much deeper into given performance experiences or performance anomalies, maybe bots. But check out the Whopper. We'll publish more of the calendar of events on the Perf Bites website.
Mark, I just have a quick question.
Yes?
Does it take two hands to handle the Whopper?
It did today for the one I had for lunch.
I haven't had a Whopper in a really long time.
Yesterday was National Hamburger Day, and I missed it, so I
that's
I stopped
that's pretty
today.
Good. No, that's insane. But if you're if you don't have a lot of food in your life, you don't have a lot of money to spend. You're going to get the most out of it.